Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. Lord Gaul was my username back when I fell in love with the sport, back when I was on all of the kickboxing forums. You know, we've got Twitter now. We didn't have it then. So back then, it was, for me, it was all about Kakutugi Info, K1 Fans, K1 USA. That's really where I fell in love with the sport, where we exchanged videos, where we used to use Mega Upload, which doesn't exist anymore because the guy got caught and went to prison. Just a different world. At that time, but decided to use that name to represent, you know, what got me into kickboxing and how I started. The other way to get into the get the podcast is, of course, to go through the iTunes search engine. It's the most efficient way. Just enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and the show pops right up. So I'm gonna go ahead and go into it big. The main thing that I want to talk about, I've got a few topics that are a few, you know, fight cards to break down, but the fun one, of course, is the Bellator Kickboxing 5. And the reason why I say the fun one is they're coming off one of their better shows, probably the best show that they've had. I really, really enjoyed it. Had some, you know, flashes of old, flashes of new. It was just an enjoyable card throughout. It, of course, was a mixed event. It was also connected to Victory World Series. So there's a little bit of both. I liked how they did it with the Bellator, and they basically had the Bellator ring, and they lifted, or excuse me, but the Bellator cage, and they lifted it up, and they put the ring in afterwards. So that was really cool. Had a lot of fun stuff. I'll go ahead and jump into the card. So we'll do Bellator, we'll do W5, and we will finish with returning to the Legend Series and talking about what made Jermaine Duradami such a great all-time legend in kickboxing and Muay Thai. So we'll get to it. First fight I'm going to talk about, I'm not going to talk about all the fights, but Felipe Salmon, as he gets a TKO victory over Florenzo Passare. And the reason why I bring up this victory for Salmon is Salmon has always been kind of a guy who, he was used back in its Showtime back in the day, and just a good guy, but always known as kind of serviceable. You know, like, just bring this guy in, he'll go and, you know, put on a decent show, but he'll lose. Like, he won't beat the elite guys. So he spent his career not beating those step-up guys, but people keep using him on their cards. He shows up, he gives his best effort, and he was able to get a stoppage victory today. So shout-out to Felipe Salmon. He's always going to be in that role. I'm just going to be real. I just don't see him ever becoming the kind of fighter that competes on a high level and gets victories against the best in the world, but I do see him as a guy who can really put on, you know, entertaining combat sports outings with the right opposition, and he'll bring it. He's game, but I just don't see him being one of the elites. But it is really cool that he was able to get this W today. Definitely, definitely, it was really cool to see him win the other day. Next person on the card I'm going to talk about is the best female fighter on the planet, Anissa Mexen. She gets a victory over Shara Vincis for the ISK 54.5 kg title. I laugh because you guys heard me say it before. It's so tough to keep track of some of these titles, ISK, and what's going on and where they are and who's using them and who's sanctioning them and who's got what title. And it gets confusing for sure. So I just laugh at it. But the most important thing is, she wins again. Anissa Mexen is, you know, her, like Iman Barlow, the number two female fighter in the world. They fight all the time. All the time. As many opportunities as there is for them to compete, they're competing. So it's really cool to see how skilled she is, how much of a separation there is between her and her opposition. She really is good with her boxing. She's got good time kicks to the body. Her low kicks are very, very sticky. Good hook low kick setups. She's got this nice blend of Thai and what would people would call, you know, Dutch style kind of kickboxing flow. It's a weird blend to watch it, but she does put on a lot of beautiful work. She's a decent clincher, but not a great clincher. I definitely like her, you know, more in space, and she moves well, and she can find her shots. She's just very, very talented. So shout out to Anissa Mexen, another big time victory. And of course, what's next for her is the Glory Series. So I'm looking forward to them finally bringing her in. I know they've got, you know, several cards scheduled throughout the year. I'm hoping that they're not waiting specifically for them to go back to France. I think Holland would be a good one to do her first fight. So good stuff there. Glad to see Anissa Mexen get this, you know, get signed to Glory. get that big opportunity to get her name out there. And of course, her getting signed to Glory, the first thing that popped in my mind is there's a chance that she meets Tiffany Von Soest. And that'll be big for Tiffany because Tiffany, she's given herself the opportunity to go against some of the better fighters in the world. She's got her hands raised some, you know, lost others. I thought that she did a good job of being very, very competitive and lost close to, I would say, the Denise Kielholz fight was super close, but the knockdown being the difference. And, of course, she definitely, Kielholz had some really good, you know, exchanges. She was able to exchange pretty well in moments. But I thought Tiffany Von Soest was right there, you know. And I thought that the Kaylee Reese fight, again, right there, very, very close. But she wasn't able to get her hands raised in those. This brings in the number one opposition at the weight class. So she dropped to this weight class, and now she's got the two girls. It looked like her and Iman Barlow might meet last year, and then Iman Barlow's management had problems with the Glory event, you know, and, you know, with the amount of time that they wanted to stretch the event out over the year and the obligations that it had for Tiffany, because the guy who owns Infusion manages, Iman Barlow. So that fight didn't end up materializing. It was looking like that's all roads led to Iman Barlow versus Tiffany. Like, that's what it looked like. Didn't end up happening. Injuries and other things made that tournament not be as great as it possibly could have been. Go ahead and transform to, this year. Nissa Mexen gets into the field. Do you do a four-woman tournament and have her fight for the title? I'd be fine with that. Do you just have her straight up go fight for the title? I'd be fine with that. I do think that this is one of those fights where if they do meet without anything happening, you know, as far as build-up and so on, just go ahead and just throw away the rankings, because their rankings, the moment Nissa Mexen signed, she ended up on the ranking somewhere. So don't go too crazy about that, because I know some people get on Glory about their rankings because they don't make a lot of sense. There's not a lot of consistency. They seem like they are, if someone's going to be fighting that week, they seem like they're high in the rankings. If they're not fighting, someone else is high in the rankings. All that confusion is going to come into play when you see Nissa Mexen come in. All you need to know is right now Nissa Mexen's got the best resume of any female fighter on the planet. And when she fights Tiffany Von Soest, it will be a meeting of two top five fighters in the world. So, should be fun when it goes down. Armin Petrosian gets a victory over Muhammad Homor. This was for the WKU 70kg title. Armin Petrosian, I think he's just settled into his role. He's going to always fight on, you know, cards that his brother fights on. And he'll usually be the undercard opposition there, you know, or he'll find someone there good early. So it's not like he'll fight and then two fights later Petrosian will be fighting. He'll be fighting like six fights away from his brother. He does most of the pad holding. I don't know if I've ever told people that. When I was doing the kickboxing documentary, and when I went to France and Petrosian fought that night, I've seen Petrosian fight several times. And Petrosian, that actually was a weird night because it was a groin shot that kind of ended his fight with Shahid Al-Haj. But the thing that I liked about that, you know, being in the back, you know, his main trainer is just kind of hanging out. The guy who is doing the work, Armin Petrosian, does the pad work. He gets his brother ready. And you have to imagine, they've been doing this together their whole lives. So Petrosian is kind of settled into his role of fighting around the middle portion of the card. You know, he'll get a W. He's had some step-up victories. He lost to Jabir Askarov, but then he beat Askarov later. I think he's got a victory over Yoshihiro Sato. Of course, he's had his share of losses, and step-up opportunities. And he never really got that big promotional push too many times. And then, of course, the scary thing is you don't want him to fall into, you know, a role like he fought Alim Nabayev. And Alim Nabayev, you know, kind of dominated that outing. And you don't want him to fall in the role where young upstarts are looking at him as a solid kickboxer to go against, to kind of be in that middle ground between tough and, you know, not too hard. You know, you never want to be in that role. So I look at what he's done with his career and where he's chosen to fight, and this is a good opportunity for him, and he got a victory here, and he'll move on. He'll stay here. He'll fight step-up guys here and there. I actually think it would be fun. I mean, there are some fights that I would like. I thought the Mustafa Haida would be a fun fight if they can make that happen at some period of time. But all in all, you know, Petrosian's a solid fighter. Armin Petrosian's a solid fighter. And we'll see more from him down the road in this kind of same role. Gaston Balanas, in his first kickboxing rules out, and gets a victory over Luca DeSanto, 30-27 on all cards. Very dominant. I was kind of tweeting about this. I personally think that Bolanos is ready to be pushed. I thought the one cool thing, though, about Lion Fight is it seemed to me when he was there, he kind of blew some guys out early because he was the far superior fighter, and then he started to test himself against guys with a lot of fights. Now, again, all Thai fighting records are not created equal, no matter what the win-loss is. So even in that step-up opportunities, there were still some guys that were guys that I would still expect him to have success over. Like clearly, there were guys there. But towards the end of it, he was really challenging himself. And the fight that he lost, I think, in his last outing, I thought that was a real big step-up fight. I think he could do the same in kickboxing. I thought this was a good one to get started, you know, but now I want to see him push himself a little bit. He's good enough to do it. Dia Santo is a guy who's had success in Italy, but for me, Italy is a good kind of middle-of-the-pack country when it comes to Muay Thai kickboxing. They've got a lot of promoters who get those guys together and get their fight records developed, but they're not doing what you see in Belarus. They're not doing what you see in Russia. They're not doing what you see in Holland or in England, but I do think that they're solid. They're doing all right. So good stuff for Bolanos, who really, really put on a kickboxing clinic. I thought his boxing pretty much landed whenever he wanted to. I thought his spinning stuff was a little off. I think it worked a little bit better with the elbows. So I thought his spinning back fists were a little off. Plus he had Stefano as his ref. So, you know, Stefano's calling every little everything. But I thought that his kickboxing and low kick flow was really good. Fitzgibbons, his coach in the corner, mentioned, you know, he's not checking the low kicks, you know, definitely building the low kicks. And I thought Bolanos pretty much had whatever he wanted whenever he threw it. He's the far superior guy, so I definitely want to see a little bit of a step up in the next one. Nothing crazy, but I definitely want to see, you know, there are some guys in Europe I think that would be decent opposition for him. So it's not like I'm asking for him to, you know, go for, I'm having a mental lapse right now. They just signed him from Glory, and I can't think of the gentleman's name. Shows what happens when you get old. But anyways, they... Gabriel Varga. Sorry, just popping around in my head. I would have killed myself if I couldn't get that one. Gabriel Varga just got signed. I don't think that they do that one next. That's something that you kind of develop, and that's a fun fight to do for your title fight down the road. But I really do like his skill set in kickboxing, and I think he's going to be a lot of fun to watch for some years to come as he continues to do both kickboxing and MMA and just kind of be a prize fighter. Have fun being a prize fighter. Mustafa Haida put on a very good performance against Enrico Kiel. I was disappointed in some of the scorecards because it was a split decision, which I didn't see. I definitely thought Mustafa Haida had won the first two rounds. He injured his hand in the second round. And it was a good call by the commentary. But I do think that the commentary didn't give Enrico Kiel as much love. I think that they were kind of enamored by the fact that Haida had broken his hand and that he continued to fight on with his right hook. He hurt his left hand. The left hand was just scoring like money. Straight down the pipe. Real, real clean in the first round. Same early in the second round. Simple combo. He was just playing slick. He had a slick uppercut that he did. He had a, you know, really, really... what I would call savvy defense, where he caught most things, didn't really play counter as much. He usually played counter off of, you know, when I'd say Kiel got a little bit too extended. But I thought he just kind of played clean and he found his moments. And he's gotten better. You know, once upon a time, Jordan Watson just, like, pretty much cleaned him out in a decision in Glory. And I felt like he didn't get anything going. And Jordan Watson plays a boxing and body kick game. So I thought that was a really good job there. Haida's had some good step-up opportunities. I thought this one was one of the fights where he looked really, really good with the clean left hand. And when he got injured, playing that hook body kick, hook low kick, and they were like turn hooks. So basically the back leg would turn out as he shot the sweeping right hook across, and then he'd fall into the clinch too. All these things were buying himself time. But this, towards the end of the second round, I thought Kiel started to pick up on it, that the defense wasn't as strong. So he started to let his hands go, realizing that the block wouldn't be able to do it. He did a sweep, and it looked like Haida was going to die trying to stand up with his injured hand. You know, he really looked like he was in bad shape. And but he got up. They didn't call it. He got out of the round. Round three, for me, was so clear for Enrico Kiel. I thought Haida had some moments for about maybe the first 40 seconds of the round where he was trying to, you know, throw the hook and kick and be elusive. But there was probably a minute period of time where Enrico Kiel was just all over Hayden, and Hayden was just surviving. And I think it was at that moment that the commentary kind of finally caught on to Enrico Kiel's work. But, man, Hayden did a good job of surviving for the most part. But I thought Enrico was turning it up. I thought that he was showing the skill that made him once upon a time the quotations K1 World Grand Prix champion. I thought he was working hard. I thought that he went after it. And at the very end of the round, he scores a 1-2, and the 1-2 put Hayden on his butt. The ref kind of gave this confused, not sure what to call it, and I think he ended up calling it a slip. To me, it was really, really clear that that was a knockdown. I thought it was clear he went down because of a punch. Hayden actually had the look of, you know, kind of disappointment on his face that he'd go down at that period of time. This was an easy one for me. This, for me personally, easy knockdown call. They do not give him the knockdown, and we go to the cards. When we go to the cards are in favor of, are a split decision in favor of Mustafa Hayden. I had it a draw if you count the knockdown, because that 10-8 round would neutralize the two previous rounds. But for whatever reason, I'm assuming a judge gave them round 1 and 3. I'm assuming those are the ones that he gave to Enrico Kiel, the one who gave it to Kiel, because I could see Kiel, I didn't think he was landing anything significant, but I thought that he was at least active, and he was throwing punches that were caught on the guard a lot are missed. But I could see how the activity, if you have the wrong camera angle, could be confusing. My personal opinion, though, was I thought it was a draw if you don't count it down. If you don't count it down, I thought it was easy for Hayden. So Hayden gets a victory. He moves on. 70 kgs, of course, it's one of the stronger weight classes in the world to find talent consistently. So even if, you know, K1 had their field and Glory had their field, you could still go out and find some really good guys at 70 kgs. So shout out to Hayden, and let's see more of him down the road. John Wayne Parr had a very John Wayne Parr-esque fight as he gets a victory over Nando Calzada. The cool thing about this fight, first of all, round one of John Wayne Parr versus Nando Calzada was the dream scenario, the literal dream scenario for the Glory Kickboxing brand. If people had never seen kickboxing and you showed them that scrap, you'd be like, oh, these guys are bringing it. And of course, John Wayne Parr, he's older, so the John Wayne Parr barrage isn't the same as it used to be. But he can still find clean offense when you're exchanging, because he's used to doing it. So when both guys are trying to play, strikes and look for offense in between, that's his game that he can play and have a lot of success with because of his history of being able to throw those big shots, get people, really John Wayne Parr. He kind of became a legend because of his defense was pretty strong, but his strength and his ability to kind of barrage and get you in bad shape. Like when he turned it up, he turned it up. And Nando, young, able to move, not super young, 31, but you could see that he had some quickness and some movement. He was able to score and get away from Parr a few times. But Parr was able to close the distance, keep throwing offense. And there were about two or three times late in the first round where both guys were just biting down on the mouthpiece and just throwing. Offense was scored. Crowd was loving it, and it's great. It's why John Wayne Parr was so loved. I will go into it when I do the Legend series with John Wayne Parr. I'll probably even hit him up and see if I can get him on the show. Just talk about why he was so beloved by the kickboxing community, by the Muay Thai community. But this kind of performance just kind of adds to that. You know, he really, really brings it. So after a really good fight, really good exchanges, really good work by both guys, Nando was scoring a lot of offense too on the move. John Wayne Parr, his defense has always been he was strong and then he'd go right after you. You know, he just take your offense strong and he'd go right after you. And if you look at Nando, he was able to score and get away. He had his moments. And then there were moments where he decided that he was going to throw down. Everything was going good. Everything was competitive. And then John Wayne Parr, in the second round, he switched his game plan up a little bit by adding low kicks to it. So not necessarily doing something different, but just adding on to his offense with a low kick. And he was scoring the low kick good. At the end of the second round, after scoring it successful, Nando had taken the whole fight and not had any threat of any kick coming towards his head. And I think the low kicks can help to distract you from that. And I'm not saying that it was Jiang Weipar's, you know, specific goal. If I say the low kick set it up, it doesn't necessarily mean that Jiang Weipar went out there and scored low kicks with the intention of finding a head kick later. I am saying that the flow of how this fight took place, low kicks were scored to Calzada throughout the fight. And when a kick came, I just think that he had his mind wired, it's going to be low. You know, we kind of saw that in the MMA fight that happened earlier where Melvin Manhoff lost. He just got in the habit of thinking the kick's going to come to my body or come to my the leg, and then one went high and got him. In this situation, it looked like Calzada didn't have any kind of response whatsoever to a head kick coming towards him. But it caught him clean, shinned ahead, he went down, he was knocked out, and he fell forward. It was really cool, Jiang Weipar, and of course, Jiang Wei, trying to climb the ropes in the corner as a struggle. He's so much fun. But he gets the big KO victory. Shout out to him. A fun fight, and it's really cool because some people didn't get to see that part of him, you know. And then the stoppages that he got, you know, they didn't really have the best of footage to kind of emerge from his MMA glove Muay Thai league. Like, there's not, like, sometimes you get footage from it, but you don't get the greatest footage from it. This was a world stage, if you will, and he got a big-time KO. So shout out to Jiang Weipar. Real good stuff. Denise Kielholz, again, this is the best card that they have ever put on for the Glory or the Bellator kickboxing brand. And it was made even better by the fact that Martin Machieliero did a great job of being competitive with Denise Kielholz. First of all, we get maybe 2-3 seconds in the fight. Denise Kielholz throws 3-2 against the southpaw Martin and lands the right hand clean. That set the stage for what would happen for the next 5 rounds. Anytime Kielholz threw boxing clean, she landed it clean. Like, she just too many exchanges. There were so many times throughout this 5-round fight where Martin Machieliero would have her head snap back, like, from the offense scored on her. She just kept pushing, though. Another thing that Machieliero did that I thought that was good outside of her toughness was she was able to score in moments because Kielholz is there. Kielholz is not one of those, you know, in-and-out kind of fighters. She's not afraid to get hit. She will get in there and exchange with you, which means it leaves the opportunity for her to get hit here and there. But she just, you know, Michelletta would score here and there, get the body kick going here and there. But Denise Kielholz got the boxing going, then got a simple game where she attacked the inside leg going, really got that hurt, then built on the boxing later in the rounds. There was a period of time, I want to say in the 4th or 5th round, where Denise Kielholz just had a smooth boxing, kickboxing combination where she must have put 8 or 9 strikes together before she dropped the inside leg low kick on the end. And I remember it was brought up in the commentary, Mitrione caught it, and I was like, it was awesome. It's awesome to see. Like, when I do my year-end highlight, that video will make it because it was really, really cool stuff. Like, she is a talent. So Denise Kielholz, not only is she talented, not only is she one of the top 5 fighters in the world, she's got the look. You know, she could be sold. They're using her a lot. They got to bring her over to the States. She's such a talent. So it was really good to see her get her hands raised and defend her title. Denise Kielholz, one of the stars in female kickboxing. We end the card with Giorgio Petrosian as Amancio Perishiv really, really gave it his best effort, but he was just overmatched. Simple as that. Nothing wrong with being overmatched when you're going against, you know, one of the best of all time. Giorgio Petrosian came out there doing his Giorgio Petrosian thing, solid defense, scoring clean 1-2s. Anytime you use your guard, he sneaks a sneaky knee in there, puts a body kick behind it, straight lefts downstairs, 3-2s upstairs. Anytime you throw offense, he's going to play the pull. He's going to play pull counter. He usually likes to play his pull counter with the hook, not the left hand. So, like, he'll pull away and he'll almost, like, check hook it, like, like on the lean back. He doesn't necessarily always move his back leg out, so he doesn't, like, back leg out and turn. He usually likes to just step back and sweep that hook, and if your momentum goes forward, he drops the left hand in there. I thought Amancio Perishiv was befuddled and couldn't find anything going for 2 rounds. No shame in that. That's just what happens to everybody. But in round 3, I think he made up his mind that I'm going to go down fighting. I'm going to go down on my shield, and he really let his offense go. He really put the effort into it. It opened him up enough for Petrosian to score big, get him in trouble. Petrosian drops him with the hands combination. Perishiv gets the opportunity to recover. They come out there again, and then the ref missed it because Giorgio Petrosian dropped Amancio with a knee to the body, and the ref missed that. And then, because of a mouthpiece being gone, right before Petrosian was about to score the knockout, he had Parashiv in trouble. Right before he's about to score the knockout, ref comes in, stops the action to put the mouthpiece back in. And though Petrosian was dominant in the last portion of the, you know, last 26 seconds, the momentum was gone. And because the momentum was gone, he was able to recover, find his bearings. Just the whole mentality and everything was different. They did a good job in that one Petrosian did a good job of being professional, looking for a stoppage. He turns it up late, just like he did with the Jordan Watson fight. So something in this period of time and his age, he's starting to sit on his power a little bit more. Maybe it's because his left hand is healed. You know, maybe he's confident in his left hand not breaking. Like, maybe that's what's caused this surge of confidence to make him go after the opposition with the aggression that he's had lately. And I really didn't think about that before. Just, you know, doing this podcast is the first thing that brought it to my attention. But there is a good chance that is why he has gotten a little bit more aggressive. Because in his prime, I felt like he broke his hand like twice a year. That's what it felt like, because he was always seemed to be injured. So shout out to Petrosian. Good victory here. And, of course, we look to see more from him down the road. Any fight's good for Georgia Petrosian. Simple as that. I mean, with K-1 Royal Grand Prix doing that tournament, I wouldn't be surprised at all if both Bukau and Giorgio, part of them miss going to Japan and being a part of that. I wonder how much of them started to think, man, I wish I still had the opportunity to. I wonder how, you know, that goes through their head. Because Petrosian, that was the last time where I felt like he had consistent opposition. Not always great, but consistent opposition was when he was on fighting under the K-1 banner. And he didn't even fight under them for very long. But since then, it's just been, used here and there. Glory used him here and there. Everybody, you know, kind of sporadically find their moments. So we'll see. We'll see. Should be a lot of fun. And hopefully Georgia Petrosian has another good fighter to go against in future. Chingiz Alexov almost happened last year. Broke my heart when it did and when it didn't. So I'm hoping that kind of matchup comes his way again. But he still got work in. And Amancio, he did what he needed to do. This is the history of kickboxing. You're a young, up-and-coming star. You're the champion of your country. You go against one of the better guys in the world. It's always been that way. The example I brought up on Twitter is there's Lekko. He's got this really good interview after he beats Badahari with a spinning back heel kick to the body. And then, of course, Badahari avenged that loss, you know, about 9-10 months later. But when the first time they fought, Badahari was young, and he's talking trash, and he's like 19 years old, 20 years old. And, you know, he called everybody old, and, you know, just, but his big thing was his step-up opportunity, his step-up fight was to go against, of all people, for Badahari, it was Lekko. And after Lekko got the win, he goes, hey, he's young, he's talking trash, you know, I understand it. He goes, but I don't have a problem with it because he went against me, and that's what you're supposed to do. He said, when I was 20 years old, I went against Ernesto Hoost. And that's how it goes. The history of our sport, another example I brought up was Paul Briggs when he met Jamad and he got stopped by low kicks. But he said he went against the best in Japan. And then after he went against the best in Japan, he went against the best in Thailand to see where he was. He wanted to test his skill. And it didn't go his way. He got stopped. But there's no shame in that. None. You are supposed to challenge yourself against the best guys in the world. So in kickboxing, they kind of throw you in there with somebody great. Then afterwards, you see where you are and you go from there. Shout out to Amancio Parashiv and his team and his management for getting him this opportunity. Now he moves on. A Jordan Watson type fight's another good fight for him. You know, like, he just needs to keep getting opportunities, keep competing at a high level. Really, really good stuff for him. And I wish him all the best. Good stuff. So we leave that and we are going to go to the W5 event. I'm not going to talk about all the W5 fights, but I guess I got to talk about the biggest one. And the biggest one is the Wonder Kid does it again. Vlad Tuinov gets a victory over Masaru Glunder. And they did it a weird way of 71 kgs. Masaru Glunder is a guy who could fight lower or higher. Like, he is really a smaller weight version of Mirko Grunhardt. Mirko Grunhardt, I remember he fought at his walk-around weight a couple times. Not necessarily that I recommended, but he just is a will-fight-anybody type of guy. And Glunder is a guy who, you know, moved down below 70 kgs for an opportunity to fight Sanchai, and then he moved above it, as we have now, for his opportunity to fight Vlad Tuinov. Tuinov, special kid. He's got all the tools. Go ahead, for people who, you know, I've mentioned him on this podcast before, take your time and find out about this young star. Very easy name. V-L-A-D, last name Tuinov, T-U-I-N-O-V. He has got tons of content on YouTube, okay? Take the time, check this kid out. Very, very talented guy, a star moving forward. Marcelo Gunder, I hope we didn't see the best of him, because, man, was he on fire after he got that, you know. And again, it happened because of a cut. But he was winning the fight before the Masaki Nori fight came to an end. He came out aggressive, and Nori was finding his moments here and there. He's looking for the long-term work as opposed to the short-term success. But really, really good stuff, in my personal opinion, by Gunder, as far as moving and finding opportunities, you know, before he dropped to another guy who's slumping, Philip Minoru, before he, you know, lost that fight, he dropped Philip early, you know, and I guess time will tell what will happen with Gunder. He's going against the best guys in the world. He's really living the experience full. He's lost to some of the elite. He's got some wins. He's the opposite of what I was talking about with Salmon. Salmon got some opportunities, but he was never successful in those opportunities. I won't say opposite, but it's different. Gunder has had the high-level step-up opportunities. It just didn't go his way all the time. You know, sometimes he got some victories, for sure, and sometimes he didn't. But he really fought tough. He fought the champion tough. He had a really good outing with Ku Fairtex, despite the fact that, you know, Suzumaru Ku, despite the fact that Ku won, I thought that his outing and his effort was good. So, Gunder is a tough guy. He's going to fight the best in the world. He's almost like a Stefan Leko type, just a guy who's there and will go against anybody and put on a good outing. As for what happens, he can keep doing what he's doing, getting this opportunity over in K1, getting this opportunity, you know, in Yukao or wherever. He can fight. Keep fighting. I like Masaru Gunder. I'm glad that he's making a career of this. Vlad Tuinov, he's their it guy for their brand. Keep fighting. If he signs a promotion, like a bigger fight deal with the promotion, it's to his best benefit to make the language clear that he can keep competing for W5. Because they're moving him. They're making him the main event. He really is a special, special fighter. This one went down in Croatia, and I liked seeing this kid compete. I want to see more of him. Good stuff by Vlad Tuinov. I'll go ahead and run through some of these other results. Milan Paulus gets a victory over Luke Tumek, a knockout in the second round. Theo Mekalik gets a victory over Nikola Kemessa. And then I've got Andre Kedvas getting a victory over Jiri Makalov. And I think that will round it up. Bersik gets a stoppage victory over Sergey Chadid, and that was in the fourth round of a five-rounder. So, you know, decent card. I'll go ahead and round it up. I think there's just one more I forgot. Let me see here. Mohamed Deskaj gets a victory over Krzysztof Ozelski. I hope I'm pronouncing that Polish name right. Nevertheless, that's the rest of the card. But the most important part of the card I talked about, that Vlad Tuinov getting the victory early, or early on in the breakdown of this card. Me talking about his victory over Masaru Gunder. That is the most significant moment of this card. So hopefully, you know, they keep doing good stuff. They've been at W5K Kick TV. They've been streaming their events. So they really have given you the opportunity to see it. Not everybody does that. We need to have more people doing that in the kickboxing world, because we'll follow it and I'll cover it. So if you've got a good kickboxing show and you listen to this podcast, tell me about it. If there's a stream to it, I'll cover it, because I want to do everything in my power to get kickboxing out. It's the sport that I love, and I really, really enjoy it. So we will go ahead. A couple of things to mention. Urina Barrs will be fighting this coming up weekend, and definitely good for her. She will be competing against I forget the young lady's name, but she will be, the biggest thing is, she'll be competing in what would be back-to-back weekends where the Bellator Kickboxing has a card, so definitely good stuff there. Thai Fight did a card, and it didn't get to see the fights, so I don't want to, dismiss the card, but it didn't get to see the fights, but there were definitely some outcomes I want to talk about. Santai competed, and he gets a victory over Abdel Noor Ali Kada. He gets a victory there. Santai, of course, doing his thing in Paris. Very, very skilled guy. We had poor Tortor Petrongrian as he gets a victory over Charles Francois. Mohamed Suenin gets a victory over Payek Sumai. Just a card. Sedzikorn fought in this card. He gets a victory over Johanne. I'm going to butcher his last name. Biasajor. Apologize if you listen to the show and you saw that I butchered your name. My apologies. But there are, of course, a couple other ones of names that people are familiar with. Antoine Pinto gets a victory over Adrien Tonke. Leo Pinto gets a victory over Kamel Puiste. Hamza Nagato gets a victory over Super X. Just a solid card. Solid card. I would say Johan Dre's victory over Ikuizang. I'm messing his name up. Ikuizang. I had it down. And I actually am familiar with Ikuizang because he fought in TIE Fight back, you know, like a while ago. You know, he was showcased and they put time behind him. I should have remembered him, but, you know, I'm old, so I forget. So, and then Rafael Landra getting a victory over Soyuk. Soyuk's going backwards, man. For a while, he was a Thai who had international opportunities, and I never understood why. But because he didn't have an entertaining brand of Muay Thai. You know, like, there are some guys who they bring over, and you're like, man. Like, if you watch Santai fight, you literally feel like you watch something special. You watch something that you didn't think that you'd see. That kid's good. You know, it's something special. But if you watch, you know, Soyuk, he's talented, but there's nothing about him that screams out at you. There's nothing about him that makes you say, man, I really, really want to know who this guy is, want to know more about this guy. He is really, really skilled. You know, that doesn't happen. Doesn't happen when you talk about Soyuk's not a guy whose name comes up in that way because he doesn't enamor you. He wins, but he doesn't blow you away. So sometimes it's just management, but he's not like Anouat. You know, even though Anouat lost in the international stage, people still loved him and wanted to see him fight, you know. And he had his wins there, too. So, we will see. But Soyuk got this opportunity. So, shout out to TIE Fight doing their show. I was a little torn if I was going to talk about that one. But I'm glad I took the time in. I will go ahead and wrap everything up. Yeah, I'll go ahead and wrap it up. We're 36 minutes in. Go ahead and wrap the show up by talking about who I feel is what makes Jermaine Durandami a legend in kickboxing and Muay Thai. So, first of all, it needs to be noted that it adds to her legacy that she went to the Mixed Martial Arts World and won a world title there too. Like, it adds to it. It's really important that that happened. But for people who don't know, she was one of the... Lucia Riker, of course, was first. Lucia Riker was the first big-time, huge female kickboxing star. She was first. So we definitely want to give her credit and talk about her role. And then, of course, we had other stars to emerge after her. But I'd say the next person that people thought was, this is the next it girl, was Jermaine Durandami. Like, they thought that this is the next superstar. She had all of the appeal. She had the stoppage victories. She just really went on like, just these just scary runs where she was just stopping everybody. Really, really tough. So, I'll go ahead and go down some of her victories. And again, I won't go into it because I understand that everybody likes it, but likes to know everything about everybody as far as the history goes. And some of the decisions and results are mixed up. But here's the most important year that you need to remember. In, what was it? Let me go get that date. In November 19th, 2005, it was all set up for her to go against Angela Rivera Parr. And I was a big fan of Angela Parr. So if you watch the kickboxing documentary, what you're about to hear is repeat. I was a big fan of Angela Rivera Parr because here in the States, if you watch fights late enough on ESPN, they would show old kickboxing events or somewhat recent kickboxing events. So they had a lot of the K1 cards from USA would just end up on TV at like 10 o'clock at night. 10 o'clock on one of the channels, you would see kickboxing just random. And I don't know whose decision it was, but I love them forever. But they just showed a bunch of cards. So you'd see, you know, that some old Kung Lee fights. They had, you know, some, of course, with what would be Carter Williams at the time, because Carter Williams was, you know, the American upstart who looked like he was going to be something down the road. Dewey Cooper, Rufus, like they had guys who, and of course they had their, you know, the big stars who competed for them. Big stars being Ernesto Hoost. He had a victory over Yang Norche in America. So stuff like that would make it on. Along with that, they kept playing the Strike Force kickbox Muay Thai cards back in the day. And I had fallen in love with the style of Angela Rivera Park. She was just so aggressive. She just kept, you know, at the time as Angela Rivera, I don't know if it was Park quite yet. But I know that, like, I remember when they got together and got married and had kids. It's crazy to see that you know, Jasmine's like a teenager now. But I remember when they announced it, because as I told you before, one of the reasons why Jasmine Park was so loved is because the social media. Before social media, we had fight forums, and he did such a good job of letting us into his life even back then. So that was it. That's what made him who he is. That's what made him special. Very, very entertaining. Good fighter. And she went away, had Jazzy, and then she started to get back into health, get back into fighting. And then it was announced that she was going to go against Jermaine Durandami. So I'm all excited for it. And I'm like, hey, she's coming back. And first thing that goes through my mind, of course, is, I wonder where this will go. I wonder where she is now. I wonder, like all that question kind of pops into my head. And what's going to happen? Who's she going to fight? And then it's announced that she's going to fight Jermaine Durandami. And then I remember posting and seeing people post on it and seeing, like, the kind of excitement for her to come back. And this kid from Holland, I can't remember his name, but I remember him posting just so clear, Jermaine Durandami is going to knock Angela Rivera Parr out. And it was such a bold statement, because there's not a lot of stoppages at the highest level of female combat sports in general. You know, so like just if you look at boxing and kickboxing and Muay Thai at the time, just there was a lot of clear decision wins, but it's tough to get the stoppages. And when I saw this posted with such confidence, the first thing that went through my mind was, man, that was a really confident claim. So I'm excited for the fight, and sure enough, they have their bout, and a head kick KO scores, and the next thing you know, it's clear to the world at that moment that Jermaine Durandami is the best fighter in the world after she gets that victory over Angela Rivera Parr. After that, she then goes against Chema Belakal. That's the girl who, she fights everybody. She fought Tiffany Von Seuss. She's just been fighting and fighting everybody. Jacqueline Fuchs was a solid fight. Kerry Skurs, victory. Hatice Azut is a good fight, victory for her. Maria Verheven, Brehirian, another good win. And then comes Julia Budd. Julia Budd, of course, at the time was a big-time star and won't say big-time star, but big-time killer in Muay Thai in Canada at the time. These two met, and in less than 2 minutes, we get a KO victory for Jermaine Durandami, which leads us into Julie Kitchen, and this is an interesting bout. When she went into Julie Kitchen, again, everyone thought the same. They thought that she was going to knock Julie Kitchen out. Julie Kitchen, very game, very strong. She took some big shots. But really, you know, and her husband at the time, I remember him saying it. He says, I'm not going to lie. I said, I'm not going to lie, you know, because I'm out there doing the documentary. So I go to their gym. I went to Penzance. So I was down in the, I guess it would be South England, about as south as you can get. And I go there, and we're talking about the fight. Cornwall, I believe, is the exact place. But we're talking about the fight, and I'll remember it specifically. I said, man, I wonder, I'm not going to lie, I thought when that fight was made that Jermaine was going to win by KO. And then I remember him saying, I'm not going to lie, he said, I thought she was going to win by KO too. But after his two rounds, I was like, Julie Kitchen's right there. But the important thing was Jermaine got the victory there, and Julie Kitchen would go on to be the best female fighter in the world. And then until, you know, she lost the crown, it just kind of, that's the way the game goes. It just keeps sliding over and over and over. But that Julie Kitchen victory was very, very important, because it meant that she beat everybody. Jermaine beat everybody of her generation. She had big time stoppages, and she beat the star that would be the champion for the next group of fighters. So very important victories. She then moves on to start flirting with mixed martial arts. And after being away from the sport for, I want to say, like 3 years, she returns to fight Lena Batujan Dick.
I believe that's pronounced incorrectly, but she fought Lena. And I remember she said that she didn't think that she'd ever return to kickboxing or Muay Thai, but Lena asked for her specifically. Lena really wanted to test herself, so she got to go back to Holland, compete one more time, and she was able to get the victory there. Really good stuff. Add to that, there's one more thing that goes to the legend of her. So she was the first big star since Lucia Riker. There are other, good, very good female combat fighters. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying she's the first one that people thought, this is the next. In the way that people thought Badr Hari was going to be the next Dutch kickboxing star, and the way that, people thought Alexa Ignashoff was going to be the next big thing, she was considered to be the next big thing in the female game. And after those victories, after she had those moments, the domination in the women's game, and going on, of course, to have the mixed martial arts world title as well, there was something that was added to this list that Riker wasn't able to do. Both in a boxing match and in a kickboxing match in Thailand, she had a victory over a guy. And the first time, granted, Riker went against a much tougher tougher fighter, but I believe the gentleman's name was Tom Wales or Reese or Ways or something like that, but he went and he fought and she stopped him. She stopped a guy, and it was considered an exhibition bout, but she stopped the guy. And that is, you talk about what happens with testing yourself against the physically stronger gender. She went out there, and because she was a better technician, she was able to score, a knockout victory there. And that's something that Riker tried and failed at. Now, again, what happens in a gym is different. I remember Urina Bars has dropped. She drops people in the gym. Like there are talented girls who have success against guys. But she was the best fighter in the world. She fought a guy on a card, and she stopped him, and that adds to her legend. So we've got the first big stoppage star. Not just that you get KO victories, because when you have elite women, before today's day and age, with Anissa Mexen and Amon Barlow, usually the best female fighter in the world, she couldn't find fights. She just... after beating everybody and blowing everybody out, people were done seeing her at all. Like they were done seeing her compete. They were done competing against her, and people would protect their female fighters. Way different in the guys' game. You will never have run out of people who were willing to fight a Mayweather or a John Jones or a Badr Hari. You'll never run out of people who are willing to fight those individuals, even when they are at their prime. But there was a period of time in female combat sports, just a short period of time, wasn't forever, where you have someone like a Lucia Riker who's winning and they're stopping people, and then people just stop saying, you're not going to go against her. They call and ask, we're not going to take the fight. Their mentality changes because of the level of opposition. Riker had it, and then Jermaine got it after her. And that's really, really important that she took that moniker on. Really, really important that, she was the next Dutch female star to follow. So that's important. That gets her name out there. That adds to her legend. The names. Very important that she had Julie Kitchen on her resume. Very important that she had Angela Rivera Parr on her resume. The victories were there. The fact that she won a major title in another combat sport, and the fact that she had the victory of her guy, those things added together make Jermaine Durandami... if there was a kickboxing Muay Thai Hall of Fame, she'd be a first balloter. She's really that special. Despite the fact that she's still, fighting, if it existed, she would be in it. So congratulations to a great career. Congratulations on winning the title. I've actually, talked to Jermaine several times. She's been by the gym. She's a really, really wonderful person. And she took the time to do the kickboxing documentary with me, and just a special talent. So I wish all the best to her, and definitely check Jermaine Durandami out. Look at some of her old fights and find the fight. Very important. Find the fight with her and Angela Rivera Parr, because that was like one of the first big-time epic kickboxing matchups between female Muay Thai fighters. Good stuff. Go ahead and wrap the show up there. Thank you very much for listening. God bless everybody. Thank you to the Combat Press, who's been putting my podcast show up. gonna be. I'll try to get myself back to weekly. After I did every week. Remember, I did the 2 episodes in a row, so that's why I took last weekend off, because I pretty much did that one back to back. So I should be back next week. And I said that there was a series that I'm working on, and I'm gonna do it in 2 parts. Now I am gonna do first a list of the best international full rules Muay Thai fighters. People who got the opportunity to compete on an international basis, I'm going to go ahead and talk about them, and they are Thailand-based. So, Thailand-based. And then another one I'm going to talk about is the best prospects, young prospects, people who you heard about 18, 19, people throughout the, and I'll go internet age, so I usually go 2000 to now. But I'm going to talk about those athletes as well. So, definitely make sure I keep giving you guys that good kickboxing stuff, and then add little things like, you know, series and like the legend series I've been doing and stuff like that, things to give the podcast a little bit different feel. So thank you all very much. God bless, and I really appreciate anybody that takes the time to listen to my podcast show. I do love kickboxing, and I hope you enjoy it. Peace.